the Divided Kingdom, the evening news program that many of you have come to know and trust. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly.
And this is Lou Caverly.
And, of course, we're often talking about the machinations of the New World Order, all kinds of things, the possible collapsing economy. If Pastor Jonathan Kahn's book about the Shemitah is accurate, we face a lot of danger later this year, maybe around the time of the Elul date in September, probably, or early October. We face all of the coming surveillance tightening up on us everywhere, so many things. But in our everyday lives, most of us right now are more concerned about one other thing. And what is it, Lou?
The weather. Here we are. More snow coming.
The weather outside is frightful. Yeah, that's what it really seems like, doesn't it? We're going to get into a lot of things about the climate change, the real experts, what they think about the sunspots, and many, many things. We're going to tell you about the Little Ice Age that was from 1300 to 1870. We're going to talk about the year that didn't have a summer. But first of all, we have a little human interest because a lot of you out there love your pets. Lou has an article that appeared in our local paper Sunday, February 23rd. 2015, and then he had a little follow-up. I believe that was Sunday, February 22nd. And he had a little follow-up from the next Wednesday, so we're going to hear what happened with a couple animals.
Labrador retrieved. Firefighters saved dog trapped in ice by Chris Polk. It could have been a sad story for a yellow Labrador retriever who had wandered onto the ice and fallen in Dixon Creek on Thursday, February 19th. But a plumber who was working on a house off Ratcliffe Manor Road spotted a little head moving way out on the creek, surrounded by ice at about 2 p.m. "All I could see was the head," said Phil Jones, chief at the fire department. "I was actually surprised he saw the dog." When they got the call, the volunteer fire department was dispatched first for an animal rescue. They determined a better angle to try to rescue the dog would be from property along Lee Haven Road. While en route, firefighter Jason Spies called the fire department because he knew it had special ice and cold water diving gear. Jones said, quote, "We also have other handy stuff to help us get across ice." The dog was in the middle of the ice about 275 feet out, Spy said. Quote, "There was an open spot in the middle of the creek, and that's where the dog went in," Jones said. Jones and firefighter Brian Sadler were the ones who donned special ice and cold water suits and got in the water. Jones went on to say, "Once we got in, we had to break the ice literally to get out to the dog." He said he and Saddle used their hands, poles, and body weight to break the ice while towing a canoe. Jones said they could no longer touch bottom at about 120 feet out, and the two began swimming and breaking the ice. They dragged the canoe alongside them, carrying some equipment, and were tethered by a line to a point on shore. They estimated the dog was in the water for about 45 minutes. While the firefighters said they did not know what the water temperature was, the air temperature did not get above 20 degrees Thursday on the midshore. Jones also said, quote, "The dog was below the water, all except for his head." He said the dog was caught up in the ice and could not move. "He was whining a lot," Jones said. "The closer we got, you could hear it crying." When they reached the dog, they were able to ease it out, collar first. The dog started swimming once freed and started paddling as the two firefighters made their way with her to shore. Spies said the rescue from the time they left shore until the time they got back only took about 7 minutes. Spies says he's sort of the unofficial timekeeper for Easton. Jones said Talbot County Animal Control was ready and waiting when they got to shore. The paramedics wrapped the dog up and put it in the back of the animal control van, Jones said. He said the dog was taken to the veterinary medical center, where Dr. Dean Tyson reported the dog had been checked out and was hungrily eating a large meal at about 6 p.m. Tyson reported it on the Talbot County Department of Emergency Medical Services Facebook page. Spy said they understood the dog's owners were away at the time. By later that evening, he said the dog had gone home. And Spies went on to say, with no difficulties or anything, they gave him some warm fluids, warm food to eat, and everything was good. Spies said the firefighters handled the rescue in record time. From the time we were alerted for the call to the time we were back at our firehouse, it was like an hour and 11 minutes.
And then there was that little update on Wednesday, February 25th, and this article talked about another animal that had a problem. The dog was the second animal ICE emergency, KIVFD, responded to last week. On Tuesday, February 17th, after the snowstorm, a call came about a horse trapped in an icy pond near Fox Run Lane in the Bat's Neck area. The horse had walked out onto the frozen pond and fallen through the ice into the frigid water. It couldn't get out on its own. Emergency crews from Rescue 1 helped at the scene. Firefighters said the horse seemed to be doing well after its rescue. Ice and cold weren't the only threats faced by animals recently. On Saturday, February 21st, Goodwill Volunteer Fire Company responded to a doghouse fire about 1 p.m., and they talked about in this area and what had happened there, that the dog's owner was using a heat lamp for warmth in an igloo in an outside kennel, and the lamp fell over and started a fire. And a passing motorist called 911 and got the dog out of the kennel and to safety before firefighters arrived. "I don't think there was much left of the doghouse," the person said. "A doghouse is probably not the best place for heat lamps." So if we're going into an increasingly cold world, we're going to all have to think about what is safe and what we need when we may be cut off in conditions like Boston had. And on February 22nd, they were talking about this Siberian Express in the eastern U.S. continues into the next week. And we'll just kind of spot check some of these things. Siberian Express, polar vortex, is so last year. Forecasters are calling the record-setting bout of icy air the Siberian Express, because winds coming from Russia are traveling over the Arctic Circle and pushing into Canada and the United States. "We can almost show the trajectory from Siberia all the way to the U.S., Sullivan said, noting meteorologists began using the term long ago. And Sullivan is Bruce Sullivan, a senior meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Despite being the buzzword of winter 2014, polar vortex also has been used for decades in meteorology. It is a pocket of very cold air that typically swirls around the North Pole. Sometimes little pieces break off," Sullivan said. "That has happened this week," meaning a frosty 1-2 punch.
NASA shivers. Schools in Alabama send students home early. And NASA shut down its Huntsville facility Friday as a storm began unloading ice, sleet, and snow. The Weather Service said roads were impassable in at least seven counties. Dozens of school systems dismissed students early or canceled classes altogether. NASA closed early at its Marshall Space Flight Center because of deteriorating road conditions. Huntsville and the rest of the state's northeast corner is under a winter storm warning through early Saturday, and forecasters say much of northern Alabama and Georgia could get snow and sleet, including metro Atlanta. Bone-chilling and record-breaking. Bitter cold temperatures have shattered decades-old records from Cincinnati to Washington to New York. The National Weather Service said the low Friday got down to 6 degrees at Reagan National Airport, just across the Potomac from Washington. At Baltimore's airport, the temperature dipped to a record low, 2 degrees.
It's in western Pennsylvania, temperatures dipped to minimum minus 18 in Newcastle, minus 15 in Butler, and 6 below zero in Pittsburgh, all records. Records also were set at Newark Liberty International Airport in New Jersey, 1 degree. Trenton, New Jersey, 0 degrees. New York's Central Park, 2 degrees. And Cincinnati, 12 degrees below zero. Frozen ferries. A Boston-bound commuter ferry carrying more than 100 passengers had trouble steering in the ice and had to be towed to port. The ferry, Massachusetts, departed Hingham at about 8:30 a.m. Friday, right behind an icebreaker, said Allison Nolan, an official with Boston Harbor Cruises. After the ferry went off course, the icebreaker towed it to Boston, arriving about 45 minutes later than normal. No one was hurt, and the boat was not damaged. Ferry service was canceled elsewhere in the Northeast. The Cape May Lewis Ferry, which connects Delaware and New Jersey, halted operations because of ice and wind. Ferries on New York's East River also were canceled.
Busted pipes. A 12-inch water main break in the Rhode Island town of Johnston, which interrupted service to about 1,000 customers, took about 16 hours for crews to repair. They battled through snow and frozen ground and below zero temperatures to get the broken pipe, or to get to the broken pipe after using leak detection equipment to pinpoint the exact location. And after a 6-inch water main broke in Rutland, Vermont, and workers braved the elements and were willing to get soaked to the skin in brutally cold temperatures to fix it, the city's Public Works Department declared, quote, "mission accomplished" on its Facebook page. The Friday morning break in the city of some 16,000 residents spilled water onto the streets for hours, contributing to icy driving conditions. Another kind of island living. The Virginia National Guard flew in food, medicine, and mail to an ice-bound fishing and tourism outpost in the middle of Chesapeake Bay, 14 miles from the mainland. The mayor of Tangier Island, Mayor James Uker, that's his nickname, Uker Eskridge, played down his plight, but said medicines were essential for those who could not get off the island. Tangier has no drugstore. He went on to say, quote, "But you know, we're not starving out here. This happens when you live in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay," unquote. Niagara Falls spectacle draws tourists. The deep freeze transformed Niagara Falls into an icy spectacle, encasing the trees around it in crystal shells and drawing tourists who are braving below zero temperatures. The Niagara River is flowing below the ice cover, so the falls aren't completely frozen. But days of sub-zero temperatures have created a thick coating of ice and snow on every surface near the falls, including railings, trees, and boulders. The massive ice buildup has become a tourist magnet.
We're going to get into a lot more things that are going on around the United States due to this weather. But first, let's take our first look at some of these causes that are underlying. This is real risk of a Maunder minimum little ice age, says leading scientist. Monday, October 28th, 2013. So, you know, we've been looking at this for a little while now. This is Paul Hudson. It's known by climatologists as the Little Ice Age, a period in the 1600s when harsh winters across the UK and Europe were often severe. The severe cold went hand in hand with an exceptionally inactive sun and was called the Maunder, and listeners, that's spelled capital M-A-U-N-D-E-R, the Maunder Solar Minimum. Now, a leading scientist from Reading University has told me that the current rate of decline in solar activity is such that there's a real risk of seeing a return of such conditions. I've been to see Professor Mike Lockwood to take a look at the work he has been conducting into the possible link between solar activity and climate patterns. According to Professor Lockwood, the late 20th century was a period when the sun was unusually active and a so-called grand maximum occurred around 1985. Since then, the sun has been getting quieter. By looking back at certain isotopes in ice cores, he has been able to determine how active the sun has been over thousands of years. Following analysis of the data, Professor Lockwood believes solar activity is now falling more rapidly than at any time in the last 10,000 years. He found 24 different occasions in the last 10,000 years when the sun was in exactly the same state as it is now, and the present decline is faster than any of those 24. Based on his findings, he's raised the risk of a new Maunder minimum from less than 10% just a few years ago to 25 to 30%. And a repeat of the Dalton, and that's spelled D-A-L-T-O-N, and a repeat of the Dalton solar minimum, which occurred in the early 1800s, which also had its fair share of cold winters and poor summers, is, according to him, more likely than not to happen. He believes that we are already beginning to see a change in our climate. Witness the colder winters and poor summers of recent years, and that over the next few decades there could be a slide to a new Maunder minimum. It's worth stressing that not every winter would be severe, nor would every summer be poor, but harsh winters and unsettled summers would become more frequent. Professor Lockwood doesn't hold back in his description of the potential impacts such a scenario would have in the UK. He says such a change to our climate could have profound implications for energy policy and our transport infrastructure. Although the biggest impact of such solar-driven change would be regional, like here in the UK and across Europe, there would be global implications too. According to research conducted by Michael Mann in 2001, a vociferous advocate of man-made global warming, the Maunder minimum of the 1600s was estimated to have shaved 0.3C to 0.4C from global temperatures. It is worth stressing that most scientists believe long-term global warming hasn't gone away. Any global cooling caused by this natural phenomenon would ultimately be temporary. And if projections are correct, the long-term warming caused by carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases would eventually swamp this solar-driven cooling. Now, of course, we in this program do not agree with that paragraph whatsoever. We don't think there is any global warming. There's no harm in carbon dioxide. Living beings, plants, animals, people need carbon dioxide. Everything thrives in this kind of setting on Earth. But he does say here in the last paragraph, but should Northwestern Europe be heading for a new little ice age, there could be far-reaching political implications. Not least because global temperatures may fall enough, albeit temporarily, to eliminate much of the warming which has occurred since the 1950s. So I guess he had to keep the powers that be happy by putting that little shill thing in at the end. But there's something very interesting, Lou, there. I thought that we should note that if this thing is coming, this little ice age, not every winter would be as bone-chilling and not every summer would be as poor. What do you think?
Well, I think that's very true. The Earth is a very complicated planet with the oceans that can moderate temperatures, with the winds that can carry cold air from, as we already read, from Siberia up over the North Pole even and down the other side. So that, you know, we're talking about averages here. We're not talking about one specific time. Just as in ordinary times, the you know, not every winter is the same. We have had winters here in our locale in Maryland when we get 26 inches of snow. Other winters when we get barely an inch. And I can say much the same for Boston, although I can't remember any time as I grew up for my first 21 years when I ever saw the kind of snow they're getting this year. But we did have some bone-chilling times in my time up there.
And as you said, these records are being broken. First, we have record cold recorded in several Iowa cities by Allie Krug, March the 1st, Mason City, Iowa. An Arctic winter weather system hovering over Iowa has led to several record-breaking cold temperature readings in the state. Mason City hit a record low of 18 degrees below zero at 6 a.m. Friday, shattering its 115-year-old record for February 27th of 12 below, set in 1899. Waterloo also reached a record low of 24 below zero on Friday. The previous record of 14 below was set in 1897. Records were also broken Friday in Dubuque and Elkader. Dubuque reached a low of 21 below Friday morning, well below the record of 12 below set in 1879. And Elkader, I hope I'm pronouncing that place right, had a Friday reading of 28 below. The previous record had been 18 below set in 1935. Now, we move next to Colorado. Pueblo, the Pueblo chieftain, says that the snowfall set a record. According to the National Weather Service, the city recorded 23.5 inches of snow throughout the month, 19.7 inches above normal, making February 2015 the snowiest February on record in Pueblo. The snow levels surpassed the 20.1 inches of snow recorded in February 1894. Does that seem statistically significant, Lou? You're pretty good in statistics. That 19.7 inches above normal were recorded there in Pueblo?
Oh, I think that's pretty that's a hard word to say, and I teach it. Statistically significant. Yeah, that seems very, very impressive to me. When you get 19 inches, you're talking almost 2 feet more than usual. You know, that's not just a little difference. That's a very, very significant difference.
Then we have Grand Rapids, Michigan. There we had the average temperature of 13.3 degrees, and that was calculated at the end of February by taking the average temperature of each day and finding the month average. Not only did this running total break the record for coldest February in Grand Rapids, previous record of 14.4 degrees in 1978, but it also landed February 2015 as the fourth coldest month of all time. The average temperature in February is 26.8 degrees. Only 3 days in February were above freezing. The last time a daytime high reached the 30s was February 11th. Snowfall amounts totaled 19.6, and that was almost 5 inches above average. Muskegon was not quite as cold, but finished with the fourth coldest February, with an average temperature of 15.9 degrees. The record stands at 13.1 degrees set in 1901. Muskegon also saw only 3 days with above freezing temperatures. Now, Boston is a sort of in a class of its own. It's near an all-time snow record. And so, you know, here in this shorter look at it, it said it was due to get another snowstorm, and that was on March the 1st, and this snowstorm on Tuesday could break the city's all-time snow record for the season, and that's probably happening right as we tape this program. After a Monday morning storm that forecasters said could break the record, Logan International Airport had totaled 103.9 inches for the winter, still 3.8 inches from the record set in the 1995 to 1996 winter. We've come this far, we might as well break the record, William Babcock, National Weather Service meteorologist in the Taunton, Massachusetts office, told the AP. We have a couple of storms to push us over the record. Once that is done, we won't complain if we don't get any more snow. And there's another article here that more or less says about the same thing, but let's look at the record cold in the Northeast, Lou.
February 2015 was one of the record on the record books for the Northeast. The Northeast Regional Climate Center at Cornell University says Buffalo, Syracuse, Binghamton, and Ithaca, New York shivered through their coldest months ever. The average temperature was 10.9 degrees in Buffalo, beating the 1934 record of 11.4. The monthly average was 9.0 in Syracuse, 12.2 in Binghamton, and 10.2 in Ithaca. February lows, record lows, were also set in Hartford, Connecticut at 16.1, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at 20.9, and Portland, Maine at 13.8. And it goes on to say, blizzard, avalanche warnings. Weather forecasters in Colorado issued blizzard and avalanche warnings as Pacific moisture continued to bring snow and strong winds to the Continental Divide on Sunday. The storm was expected to last through Monday, with another storm expected Tuesday. The National Weather Service issued a blizzard warning the Wolf Creek Pass and the Colorado Avalanche Information Center issued avalanche warnings for the South San Juan, Sangre de Cristo, and Gunnison areas. The avalanche danger in southern Colorado has been increased to high.
In Missouri, there were deaths reported. Three people, including one child, died in weather-related incidents. Two people were killed when a driver lost control on a snow-covered highway in Lebanon on Saturday when the car skidded into a tractor-trailer stopped because of an earlier crash on Interstate 44. The 20-year-old driver survived, but both passengers were ejected and killed. In Nevada, Missouri, sad, this is a sad one, Lou, a boy died after falling through an ice-covered farm pond. Sad to say, they rescued the dog here in Maryland, but they didn't get him. Emergency crews rushed to the scene after a caller said three children were in the pond. A bystander pulled one boy from the pond, and another boy was able to get out on his own. Illinois and Indiana got 8 inches or more of snow Sunday from the same weather system. Then there was a child in Lansing, Michigan. A girl was hospitalized in critical condition after getting stuck overnight outside her family's apartment during frigid weather that marked the end of one of the coldest Februarys on record in Michigan. Now, I'd have to wonder about that. A three-year-old was stuck outside her family's apartment, Lou? That doesn't sound good to me.
No, that doesn't sound good. I mean, can you imagine that you wouldn't know your three-year-old was outdoors, that you wouldn't notice she wasn't in the house in this stormy weather? Just as inconceivable to me.
And it says that the girl was treated for severe hypothermia, and a relative found the girl on a sidewalk in front of the apartment complex about 8:30 a.m. Saturday, and the temperature was 5 degrees at the time. That's a sad, unwritten story that we could probably guess. All kinds of things are going on in our world that we know about. The heroin epidemic is just taking over state by state by state. We know about the worldwide drug connections, the high-level people, the elite of the world running these drugs from the time of the opium wars. And we do applaud that a lot of governors now are starting to get task forces and local people involved to try to eliminate this scourge that's coming into our communities. It's a really terrible thing. Well, Texas, we even had a marathon canceled. The Cowtown Marathon in Fort Worth was canceled. Winter weather came. We're looking around here, Ohio, February 2015, Stan Boney published this March the 2nd, WYTV.com, that February 2015 was the coldest on record and the third snowiest on record. And they say here that this winter season has been good for those that own a snowplow or like skating on frozen ponds, but it has been bad for those who dread driving in snow or have trouble getting warm. It started right from the get-go with 7 inches of snow on Super Bowl Sunday, February 1st. And although February saw a lot of snow, it was the cold that really defined the month. February 7th and February 8th had temperatures in the 40s, but the rest of February was close to or below freezing. The daytime temperatures were certainly cold, but the nights were the most frigid. A 9-day stretch from February 12th to February 20th had lows ranging from 7 to negative 16, with 6 of those nights below zero. The coldest all month was the morning of February 20th at 16 degrees below zero, causing 30 accidents on Youngstown's freeways. There were also back-to-back Saturdays with big snows, 5 inches on February 14th and another 5 inches on February 21st. Throughout February, WYTV 33 News covered how road crews dealt with removing the snow and ice and how the supply of salt was holding up. We also dealt with frozen fire hydrants, the homeless, water main breaks, potholes, and an iced over Lanterman's Falls at Mill Creek Park. There were stories on how the cold and snow affects cars, pipes, and even landscaping. Here are the final numbers. And again, this is Youngstown, Ohio, WYTV, reporting in. The final numbers, the average temperature in February was 13.7 degrees, making it the coldest February on record. There were 10 days with below zero temperatures, and 7 new record lows were set. For snowfall, 27.9 inches fell last month, making it the third snowiest February. The record is 36.3 in 2010, so we were not really close. But of the 28 days, it snowed on 16 of them, and on 5 of those days, there was 2 inches or more. The Washington Post weighed in on March the 2nd. Angela Fritz: average February temperatures were well below normal across the eastern United States, while the west soared well above. Now, Lou, what does the Bible say about the last days? Do you remember about the weather? You don't. No, it's that the seasons would get mixed up. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I had a kind of an interesting dream. I think it was sort of like mixing up the climates. I can't remember now. There was an animal that didn't belong in the area, say an alligator under a tree that would be found in the northern climate. It was something like that. And, you know, I went into the Bible and I found these things, some scriptures, and I thought it was sort of a warning from God that things are changing and the weather will be more chaotic. It won't be in its normal patterns everywhere. So that would suggest this here, that the western temperatures were higher than in the east. According to Angela Fritz, February was record-breaking for many cities in the United States, but in thoroughly opposite ways. And again, she says that it was brutally cold here in the east, but markedly warm in the west. Quote, the statistics bring to mind early 1977. Weather Underground's Bob Henson said, when snowflakes fell for the first and only time on Miami Beach's Art Deco buildings, while skiers in the Rockies found themselves hunting in vain for fresh powder. Dozens of cities east of the Mississippi experienced their coldest February in decades, including some of these we've been talking about: Chicago, Cleveland, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Harrisburg, PA, Hartford, Connecticut, and Portland, Maine. Chicago's sub-zero low forecast for Wednesday night, Thursday a.m., would be the latest in the season sub-zero low since 1982. With an average temperature of just 14.2 degrees, it was the coldest month out of any month on record for Worcester, Massachusetts, which has accumulated more than 110 inches of snow this winter. Oh, Worcester, that brings back memories, doesn't it? We were going, Lou, to visit your father. Had your mother passed away yet?
I believe she
had. I think. We were going to visit your father, and it started to snow like crazy, and we were trying to get to Wenham or South Hamilton, but we had to stop at Worcester. Remember that?
And for those who might be in Massachusetts, of course, those of us up there call it Worcester. We try not to pronounce ours, unconsciously, of course. But it's a nice city about, oh, I guess probably 40 miles west of Boston. And when I was a boy, it was the scene of a major tornado that caused a number of deaths. But it's a pleasant city now. We had a pleasant stay there when we were up there.
Yes, but there was a lot of snow. We had to really cope with the snow. I can well remember that. Now, also these records, according to the Washington Post, the records were set in Bangor, Maine, where the average temperature was 6.1 degrees. Boy, that's getting a little colder. Marquette, Michigan, and Syracuse, Buffalo, and Rochester, New York. So those were records that were set. And they say there in that article, what's most impressive about these records is how much they surpass the old. 3 degrees in Syracuse and 2.3 in Bangor, which is a landslide in terms of monthly records, which typically are broken by fractions of degrees. Why don't you comment on that, Lou, the mathematician?
Well, again, that's very significant statistically. If it's a very small difference, you can write that off as just, you know, due to ordinary differences from one season to the next. But it was this bigger percentage, and it doesn't have to be very big, as that commentary said. A small difference, what we would consider small, can be very, very significant because the weather doesn't change that much in the average. You're talking average figures here. And when you deal with that, even a little bit of a change can be highly significant and highly statistically significant to boot.
And later in this program, we're going to give you in depth more information about these solar minimums and the little ice age of the past And if we can't complete all of it, be sure to tune in on our next program because we are going to continue this. And we also invite you to write to us. We've been getting a few more letters that we really enjoy very, very much. And if you would like to contribute to help us stay on the air, one of our hardest months will be April. That definitely will be tough for us because there are 5 Wednesdays and there are 5 Thursdays in the month. So if you would like to help us, you can write a check or a money order, and it can be made out to WWCR, and you can put on the memo for the Divided Kingdom. You can send that to Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's to Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you can't contribute anything, please do write us some letters because they do encourage us to remain at our post as watchmen. We finance this program ourselves, and it's quite a struggle for us financially. But we really believe that God is keeping the door open and wants us to continue because you are the remnant and you are the real Christian church. And we must alert you with the things that are warnings, and we must encourage you. And, you know, sometimes we're hanging on by a shoestring. We can't get all of the people we would like to have on as guests because we don't have a production staff. We don't have big networks or big religious organizations backing us. And the bad side is maybe you don't get as cutting-edge information from the top military whistleblowers. We're aware of that. But the good side is there's nobody telling us what we should say or, you know, doctoring it up so that it's COINTELPRO. There's nothing like that. So we feel that some of the cutting-edge information has come from you listeners, a lot of it. And we're really happy when you share with us and we can bring it on. So anyway, let's get right back here. We're looking again here at Denver. This is a little human interest about the polar bears and the postal carriers, Lou.
This is by Elizabeth Hernandez, the Denver Post. Aveda mailman Tim Aurino broke out the shorts and sunscreen for his route during the first couple of weeks in February. For the past 2 weeks, he shivered in thermal underwear and a cap. Aurino, I hope I have his name correct, Aurino has trekked through 20 Aveda winters, delivering mail to as many as 1,000 people per day, no matter how long it takes. He said the past couple of weeks have been the craziest snow he has worked through in years. Overnight snow Thursday in Denver led to a February record of 22.2 inches, recorded at Denver International Airport, breaking a 103-year-old mark. A car sits where it's not supposed to be, at East 16th Avenue and Pennsylvania Street, east of downtown Denver on Friday. Not coincidentally, area auto body shops are booked up for weeks. The snow has been a plus for farmers and auto body shops, but miserable for many residents perpetually shoveling their sidewalks and sliding off the roads. But Aurino is taking it in stride. Says Aurino, "I can't say it's been the worst in my career. It's actually been a really nice winter. This just all happened at once." He and his co-workers have it mostly figured out now. They tell one another to walk like a duck across icy sidewalks. "You can't walk a normal stride," he said. They bundle up, prepare their vehicle's wheels with what Aurino calls tire socks to help with traction, gladly accept help when their vehicles get stuck, and hope people shovel around their mailboxes. He says, quote, "You just have to plan your entire day differently when it snows like it has. You take everything more cautiously." Carrie Bowen, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Boulder, said the wacky weather has certainly made for a busy month. A high-pressure system helped to heat up temperatures at the start of the month, and then the pattern shifted, she said. Cold temperatures came down from Canada, meeting up with winds from the east and moisture. Bowen says, quote, "You just had a lot of things come together that helped bring all that snow." It was a perfect storm. Saturday, the last day of the month, could see more snow, about a half inch by sunset and another 1.5 inches overnight, meteorologists said. Historically, Bowen said, March is the snowiest month of the year, averaging 10.7 inches, about half of what Denver has seen in February. It's too soon to say whether March will be above or below that average, Bowen said.
And now I think we're going to get into what the Little Ice Age was. And to understand it, we have to know, again, about this Maunder Minimum. And again, that is spelled capital M-A-U-N-D-E-R, and then the word minimum. And it's named after astronomer E.W. Maunder, who discovered the absence of sunspots during that period. And that means the Little Ice Age, which was from 1300 to 1870. Recently published data suggests that the sun expanded during the Maunder Minimum and its rotation slowed. A larger and slower sun, it is speculated, might also mean a cooler sun that provides less heat to Earth. Just why the sun expands and contracts is not entirely understood. And isn't it comforting to know that not everything in this gigantic universe is understood by man. Only God understands everything. And we have a listener that we appreciate very much who writes to us from Massachusetts, from that snowy area. And he has alerted us that perhaps iron is being added to some of our foods. We really haven't had the time and resources to look into that yet, but if anyone out there wants to check on that, you can. And this listener also veers a little too close to the New Age thinking for me, because I came out of all that. But if we take some of his very intelligent ideas and look at it, one was that there is kind of a species intelligence. And now the part that I can't agree with as a Christian is that man pretty much will become enlightened and will use the right brain more than the left brain. And he thinks a lot of what is going wrong with the New World Order is this false use, not being fully conscious, not fully awakened and enlightened, you see, to use the right brain. Now, we would say here as Christians, number one, sin is the biggest thing of all. This is the real reason that the New World Order and other evils of history, the Inquisition, Cromwell persecuting Catholics. I mean, it's not all one group, but at times one group may go on long, 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 long times, and that would be the Inquisition, hundreds of years. There are other brutal despots. We can think of Pol Pot, we can think of Stalin, so many. At any rate, this cannot all be explained by the use of the right brain. There's something more, because evil is a reality, and we recognize that only Jesus Christ is the, the figure that dominates all of history, all of man's thinking. He towers above all of this because he is God's son. And so I came out of the New Age, so I do not like to think of myself becoming a spark of the divine consciousness, universal consciousness, when I die. I don't believe that's true. And certain miraculous things that happened when my late beloved father, Charles Cuppet, died, reassure us that he survived death as an individual, able to think and, be the person he was on Earth. I've talked about it on this program, and it's not the time to bring that up in detail again. But at any rate, I think that sometimes there are parts of truth, especially in what this listener wrote about the species memory. And for instance, I just give this as an example. I've never liked high places. And one time I told my brother I just really didn't want to go to this skiing area that was high up in the Allegheny Mountains. And then, as brothers are, they tease and they heckle you. So he suggested that we go there, and I got really upset with him. I said, you know, I said, I don't like that, blah, blah, blah. Well, some years passed by, and Lou knew about this. And then We were talking to my first cousin, who was a great deal older than I was, but we were talking one day, and she just says, "I don't like to go to that ski resort. Those high places give me the creeps." And Lou looked at me, and I looked at him, and see, it was almost like it was kind of a race memory or something that was in our genes. So there are mysteries, but with all of these things, the truth that may be in that right brain idea, it has to subjugate itself to God and to Jesus. If we are Christians, we're to bring every thought under Jesus' control. And that means every day we're to look at our lives and we are to repent. You know, I just thought of something yesterday. I didn't even say to Lou, but I did. I repented about something that I hadn't realized. I didn't have the right motive in doing something that I was doing, connected with another person. And I realized there was a little secret sin there going on. And I confessed that to the Lord, and I felt much more blessed. So I think that in the times we're moving into, we may face challenges from the weather. God may be bringing challenges to us that would just be part of his normal universe and the patterns with the weather. But we also know that judgment is about to impinge itself on this country when the Supreme Court allows all the same-sex marriages and nullifies the states, then we're going to begin to see more, and if the abortion isn't turned back. However, I think God is watching some things there. The young justice riders, they're increasing in numbers. They find out what it's like to ride against abortion and go to the colleges and present the pictures of the little babies who are being torn apart. And so you see, it's beginning to capture the idealism of the youth who realize that choice is murder. It is a depraved, horrendous abomination to God. So as long as there are young people who are beginning to awaken and do something, I don't think God will bring the full judgment. It'll come in stages. So you see, there's a lot of hope. Why don't you start praying for your friends, your relatives, your neighbors, and pray for yourself. Don't be so self-righteous and so haughty as to think you don't need to repent. Don't attack other people for things that may be deep sins that you must face yourself and realize that we must love others or we are not of Jesus. And we cannot call the police pigs. That was scrawled on the walls after Charles Manson and his killings occurred. We can't do that because not all policemen certainly are thugs. They aren't. Here in Maryland, around Christmas, we saw an African-American church was giving an award to the local police for helping them. We saw some more things. They were friendly cop things with the neighborhood people. And this is what we want. We want to encourage peace officers. We don't want to always look upon the police brutality. But you see, if we call them pigs, we are no better in Jesus' eyes because this is a spirit of hatred. This is a satanic spirit. And some of you will argue with me, but I know that it is true. You look in your scripture, and you are not of Jesus if you have this kind of a hatred using these epithets against people. So whether we're going into a little ice age or not, we must make our hearts right with Jesus. Now, I brought this all up because we are enjoying these letters. So there's one right down there by my chair today from a lady. I'm really looking forward to this. And I read the first sentence before I came to the mic, and it was, "Thank you for being my dear friends." Yes, we are your friends, and we will pray for you, and you pray for us. But now let's get into the little ice age, and we'll have a lot more on our next program. We'll be going into depth about that year that did not have a summer. And I do want to tell you what year it was before we go any farther. It is the year 1816. It was called the Year Without a Summer, or the Poverty Summer, or the Summer That Never Was, the Year That Was No Summer, and 1800 and froze to death. Sounds like a popular song, doesn't it? And this was severe climate abnormality. And the global temperatures decreased by 0.4 to 0.7 degrees centigrade. And there were major food shortages across the northern hemisphere. It was primarily the anomaly was predominantly a volcanic winter event caused by the massive 1815 eruption of Mount Tambora in the Dutch East Indies, the largest eruption in at least 1,300 years. So that's a little background on that. Now we're going to get in to the Little Ice Age from 1300 to 1870. The Little Ice Age is a period between about 1300 and 1870, during which Europe and North America were subjected to much colder winters than during the 20th century. The period can be divided in two phases, the first beginning around 1300 and continuing until the late 1400s. There was a slightly warmer period in the 1500s, after which the climate deteriorated substantially. The period between 1600 and 1800 marks the height of the Little Ice Age. The period was characterized by the expansion of European trade and the formation of European seaborne empires. This was directly linked to advances in technology, harnessing more of nature's power, and towards the end of the period, fossil-fueled power. These 200 years also saw the specialization of agricultural regions, which produced specific products for local and international markets. Now, Lou, let's find out what caused the Little Ice Age.
The cause of the Little Ice Age is unknown, but many people have pointed at the coincidence in low sunspot activity and the timing of the Little Ice Age. This so-called Maunder Minimum coincided with the coldest part of the Little Ice Age, in particular during the period roughly from 1645 to 1715, when sunspots were a rare occurrence, as noted by solar observers such as Cassini and Flamsteed. A minimum in sunspots indicates a much less active and possibly colder sun, and consequently less energy output to warm the Earth. The North Atlantic is one of the most climatically unstable regions in the world. This is caused by a complex interaction between the atmosphere and the ocean. The main feature of this is the North Atlantic Oscillation, or NAO, a seesaw of atmospheric pressure between a persistent high-pressure cell over the Azores and an equally persistent low-pressure cell over Iceland. This is the quote-unquote normal pattern, called a positive NAO index, and brings mild and humid air to northwest Europe. Sometimes, the pressure cells are trading places, and that has severe consequences for the weather in Europe. When the situation reverses, called a negative NAO, with highs over Iceland and lows over the Azores, the westerlies weaken or even reverse, and cold air is streaming over Europe, causing a cold winter here. In negative NAO winters, it is much less stormy over the North Atlantic. Storms in the low-pressure systems bring humid air from the ocean into the Mediterranean region, making it more unsettled in this region than normal. The small pressure difference allows northerly air to blow into northern Europe, making the winters dry and sunny, but very cold. There are strong indications that during the Little Ice Age, the NAO is more often in a negative mode. Volcanic eruptions are another possible cause for the Little Ice Age. For example, the year after the Tambora eruption in Indonesia was known as the Year Without a Summer. And as we said, the eruption was in 1815, and the so-called Year Without a Summer was in 1816. But the effect of such eruptions might be limited to only a few years, so this cannot have been the cause for the prolonged climatic variations associated with the Little Ice Age. After 1870, the Little Ice Age made place for the slightly milder conditions of the 20th century. Marginal regions. During the height of the Little Ice Age, it was in general about 1 degree Celsius colder than at present. The Baltic Sea froze over, as did most of the rivers in Europe. The winters were bitterly cold and prolonged, reducing the growing season by several weeks. These conditions led to widespread crop failure, famine, and in some regions, population decline. the prices of grain increased and wine became difficult to produce in many areas, and commercial vineyards vanished in England. Fishing in northern Europe was also badly affected as cod migrated south to find warmer water. Storminess and flooding increased, and in mountainous regions the tree line and snow line dropped. In addition, glaciers advanced in the Alps and northern Europe, overrunning towns and farms in the process. Iceland was one of the hardest hit areas. Sea ice, which today is far to the north, came down around Iceland. In some years, it was difficult to bring a ship ashore anywhere along the coast. Grain became impossible to grow, and even hay crops failed. Volcanic eruptions made life even harder. Iceland lost half of its population during the Little Ice Age. Tax records in Scandinavia show many farms were destroyed by advancing ice of glaciers and by meltwater streams. Travelers in Scotland reported permanent snow cover over the Cairngorm Mountains in Scotland at an altitude of about 1,200 meters. In the Alps, the glaciers advanced and bulldozed over towns. Ice dam lakes burst periodically, destroying hundreds of buildings and killing many people. As late as 1930, the French government commissioned a report to investigate the threat of the glaciers. They could not have foreseen that human-induced global warming, well, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. We don't quite buy all that. But anyway, the warming was to deal more effective with this problem than any committee ever could. And it goes on to talk about the flourishing of European culture. Despite the difficulties in marginal regions, culture and economy were generally flowering in Europe during the Little Ice Age. This is most visible in the way that people transformed their environment during the 17th and 18th centuries with expanding agriculture and large-scale land reclamation, for example, in the Netherlands and England. The Little Ice Age also coincided with the maritime expansion of Europe and the creation of seaborne trading in the later colonial empires. First came the Spanish and Portuguese, followed by the Dutch, English, and other European nations. Key to the success was the development of shipbuilding technology, which was a response to both trading, strategic, but also climatic pressures.
Now, there's one thing that I don't understand, Lou, there. It sounds as though the expansion of agriculture occurred during this terrible time. But, you know, we are going to get into in-depth that year that didn't have a summer. And what was life like then? You won't want to miss our next program. So stay warm, stay safe, and stay close to Jesus Christ. Good night.